The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Go. Welcome back to the Durst Show. Before we get to the topic of the day, the appointment by Merrick Garland of a special counsel in a manner that I believe was illegal, I want to talk about, before we get to the topic of the day, I want to talk about the most interesting artificial intelligence Freudian slip in recent years. Okay, what do I mean by an artificial intelligence Freudian slip? The website of the district attorney of Fulton County published the details of the indictment that apparently hasn't even been voted on by the grand jury. It's a Freudian slip because, of course, the artificial intelligence knows more than we know. They know that the indictment is a foregone conclusion. As long as the prosecutor wants to indict, the grand jury is going to indict. The grand jury is just 23 chairs or however many there are in Georgia that are moved around by the prosecutor. The grand jurors don't make decisions. They would indict a ham sandwich, and they do indict ham sandwiches as long as the name Trump's on them. So the machine, the artificial intelligence, knew more than the people and told us in advance before the jury actually heard all the evidence, there was an indictment and it charged a RICO and it charged this and it charged fraud and it charged forgery and it charged all the things that we know he's going to be charged with. Whether or not the grand jury actually voted on it, the machine knew. The artificial intelligence knew. It foresaw the future. But it was a Freudian slip because everybody knows, anybody who knows anything about the legal system, if the prosecutor wants you to be indicted, you're going to get indicted. So that's what happened. We'll get back to that once the indictment becomes formal. I want to spend the rest of the time today on a very strange development. So let me start by putting my prejudices on the table. I have always liked Merrick Garland. I thought he was a good judge when he was in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Big recollections of him as a student at Harvard Law School, had a good record, excellent background, was a good prosecutor, very good judge. And then he got appointed to be on the United States Supreme Court. I supported that appointment. I thought it was a good one. And the Republicans in the Senate refused to even give him a hearing, claiming some lame excuse. Oh, it's within a year of the election. It was like 10 months before the election, year of the election, and we can't allow a president to nominate the Supreme Court just so close to the election. It was always a phony excuse, and it was proved to be a phony excuse when just weeks before a subsequent election, President Trump appointed Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court just weeks before the election. Nobody raised a fuss about that one, and they confirmed her quickly and speedily just before the election, and indeed, Trump used that as part of his election campaign to try to get elected president. Look, I appointed conservatives to the Supreme Court. So it's a lot of nonsense. So I supported Merrick Garland. I liked him. I've been very disappointed in him as Attorney General, and my disappointment hit the low point on Friday when he got on television and announced that he was appointing the existing counsel who was investigating Hunter Biden, a guy named David Weiss, who was the U.S. attorney in Delaware. He was now elevating him to the special status under the regulations of special counsel. There's only one problem. Here's what the regulations say. This is paragraph 600.3, entitled Qualifications of the Special Counsel. And these are not just suggestions. It's not like the 10 suggestions. These are the commandments. This is a commandment. These qualifications include the following, and I quote, the special counsel shall be selected from outside the United States government. Well, the one thing we know about David Weiss is that he's inside the United States government. He's the U.S. attorney for the District of Delaware, the tiny, tiny state of Delaware, the home of the Bidens. And although he was appointed by Trump, he was appointed with the support of the two Democratic senators. So it's a mixed appointment, but that's not the point. The point is that there is a clear regulation. It's not ambiguous. Now, Garland will probably say, well, but, you know, I didn't really appoint him under those regulations. I appointed him because I have the inherent power to appoint special counsel. But I use the regulations to tell him what his power is. That is turning sharp corners. We expect more of the Attorney General of the United States. It was Oliver Wendell Holmes who 103 years ago in an opinion said, we expect the citizens of the United States to turn square corners when dealing with the government. That's true. Recent justice of the Supreme Court, I'm trying to remember who it was, Gorsuch, recently said, quoting that Holmes opinion, well, you know, if we expect citizens to turn square corners when dealing with the government, we surely should expect government officials to turn square corners, not sharp corners, when they're dealing with citizens of the United States. And that's absolutely true. In this case, Garland did not turn a square corner. He turned a sharp corner. A square corner would be, here's what the regulation says. I'm appointing him. I'm going to comply with the regulations. His power comes from the regulations. And I'm going to make sure that every I is dotted and every T is crossed, because I'm the Attorney General of the United States. No one's above the law. And no one is above not only the letter of the law if you're the Attorney General, but the spirit of the law. Now, you know, you can argue that maybe he was just skirting the regulations, stretching the regulations. Maybe it wasn't purely illegal. We expect more of the Attorney General of the United States, and I expect more from Merrick Garland. Some of you on the right will say, well, why are you expecting so much of Merrick Garland? Look at what he's done. He has weaponized the Justice Department against Donald Trump, and there's some truth to that. But I still expected more. I expected also he'd be smarter than this. It's dumb to start a process of formal investigation under the special counsel rules by violating the special counsel regulations. It makes no sense to do that. It sends the wrong message. It sends the message that the ends justify the means. And the means here just don't seem to be proper. And there are good reasons why we want special counsel to operate from outside the government, not inside the government. We want them to be independent of this administration. We want them to be people who don't owe their appointment to this administration or who can't be fired by this administration. And although Weiss wasn't appointed by this administration, he can be fired by the snap of a finger if President Biden wants him to be fired. Now, he can't be fired as special counsel, but he can be fired as the U.S. attorney for Delaware. Another reason why he shouldn't have been appointed is he's the one who made the deal, which many people regard as a sweetheart deal. And it is a sweetheart deal if it didn't involve extensive investigations of Burisma and China and all of that. If it just involved an investigation of taxes and the gun charge, it was a sweetheart deal. If it involved just those charges, well, that seemed like it was probably an appropriate deal. But it's supposed to have covered everything, not just the taxes and guns, but every possible violation that occurred. And since he's now the special counsel, he's going to be inclined, whether consciously or unconsciously, to justify that deal, the deal that the judge rejected. I predicted, you remember on this show, I was the only one, I think, who predicted that the judge was not going to accept this deal. CNN got it all wrong, but, you know, they always do. That's a low barrier, low threshold to say, oh, my God, CNN. They always get it wrong because their so-called experts aren't experts. They're opinion people who are just giving predictions based on what they want to happen, not what they actually happen. One of these days, I'd love to see them do a show where they show the predictions and then they show what actually happened. It would be an interesting show because they were always wrong. I don't remember a single important prediction that they got right. And they always are rooting for one side rather than the other. I'm not as aware of MSNBC, but I suspect that it's probably true there as well. The reason my predictions are right, and I think it was Mark Levin who called me the Nostradamus of the legal profession because I got my opinions, my predictions right. Not because I'm smarter than the CNN people. It's because I don't allow my personal preferences to influence my predictions. I predict things I don't want to happen. I don't predict to create self-fulfilling prophecies. I predict to educate my listeners and viewers. And if I'm going to educate them, I better get it right. So I've gotten it right. In my book, Get Trump, I predicted that all of these indictments would occur. And they did occur. Just go and read my book if you can find it. You're not going to find it in bookstores. You can find it only on Amazon, where it was number one among nonfiction bestsellers. And it's still very high in sales, number one in a number of categories still today. But you can't get it in local bookstores or book fairs because they ban it. You can get it only if you go online and get it from Amazon or from one of the others that sell books online. So in that book, I predicted all four of these indictments, and I hereby predict that on three of them, there'll be convictions. A New York jury is going to convict unless the judge throws it out. Fulton County, Georgia jury is probably going to convict unless the judge throws it out. And a Washington, D.C. jury is going to convict unless the judge throws it out. But in all, Florida may be a hung jury. I don't know. But in all of those cases, I think an appellate court probably should reverse the conviction, depending on what instructions are given by the judge and what evidentiary rulings are made. But in general, I don't think these four indictments involving hundreds of counts, I mean, many of them are multiple counts. And if he were convicted on all of them, he could probably serve the next 200 or 300 years in prison. It's not going to happen. But he probably will be convicted on three of the four indictments in three of the four places that were overwhelmingly anti-Trump in the last election. So those are my predictions. But I want to get back to Garland. And I just wonder why he did it. Why do you start out what's supposed to be a fair investigation? I'm talking about starting it out with the special counsel. It was already ongoing for 5 years, and they came up with very little. But why do you start this new guy by a violation of the regulations? It just doesn't make any sense when you're going after the son of the president and maybe even the president. I haven't seen the evidence, but there have been allegations. You cross every T and dot every I. You don't skirt the law. You don't turn sharp corners. You do it right. You don't give anybody the ability to say this was unfair. Right now, everything about this case is unfair. The appointment is illegal. The jurisdiction is questionable. The cases where there have been indictments take place in jurisdictions which have unfair jury pools and judges who seem, particularly the judge in Washington, D.C., very, very biased. I mean, she actually made a statement. It's in an opinion, so it probably can't be used to recuse her, but she disputed any comparison between the protests to the 2000 election and the protests that took place after the George Floyd killing. She just favored the protests for the George Floyd killing and didn't favor the protests in January 6th. The George Floyd protests were violent and took lives and took limbs and took property and closed down government buildings and made it unsafe to walk the streets. There's no justification for those riots. You could just as well call them riots and insurrections as you could January 6th. But she made a ruling. No, there's no comparison. And she's said other things which make it clear that, sure, if I was the defendant, I would not want to be in front of her. the law firm she worked for, Boies & Schiller, was the most conflicted law firm I've ever seen in my life. And in my view, one of the most corrupt. We'll wait and see what the outcome of these trials are. But, you know, when you're going after the president, former president of the United States, the man who wants to be the future president, the man who has the highest poll numbers against the incumbent, you have to be Caesar's wife. You have to lean over backwards. You have to make sure that everything is proper. You have to make sure that the prosecution is warranted. My friend and colleague, Jack Goldsmith at the Harvard Law School, wrote a piece in the Times, it's very interesting, in which he said, look, there may be some basis for technically for illegal prosecutions of Donald Trump, but the prosecution shouldn't have been brought. You don't interfere with an ongoing election unless the case is as strong as any case has ever been. And these are not strong cases. I mean, starting with the New York case, which is so weak. And so, every day on the show from now on, I'm going to give out bananas to see how close we come to a banana republic. We're not there. I think up to now I've given two bananas. I think this appointment by Garland of an insider, a man who had already made a sweetheart deal, a man whose sweetheart deal was blown apart by the judge, appointing him in violation of the regulations, I think it gets our country a third banana. I hope it never gets beyond five, but I think we're at three at this point. And it pains me. We're not a banana republic. And Washington and Jefferson and Adams and Madison didn't want us to be a banana republic. Although there are things about our early days. I just bought at an auction the original book that accused Alexander Hamilton of having an adulterous affair with a woman whose husband had sent her to him to seduce him in order to extort him. But boy, when I go back and read some of these accusations and see who was involved in it, James Monroe was involved in it. Thomas Jefferson was involved in it. Aaron Burr represented the woman in her divorce. One of these days, somebody would make a great movie out of the first scandal in American history. I mean, there are tidbits of it in the musical Hamilton, but the reality is so much more interesting than the fictional accounts that have been made and the people who were involved. But it wasn't the government that did it. It was individuals who did it. So, you know, as sleazy as Jefferson was back in the day when he hired or really encouraged a man named Callender to be his media hitman and to get as much damaging information as he could on Hamilton, also on Adams and others. Pretty sleazy stuff. I mean, National Enquirer stuff. But today is worse because today it's the government. It's the government that's earning bananas. It's the government that's doing things that no government official should do. No government official should appoint the man to investigate the president's son whose appointment is not permitted under the relevant regulations. He can make all the excuses he wants. Well, I didn't appoint him under that statute. I just, you know, all the things. You know, maybe he has a technical defense, but sure as heck, it's not the way an attorney general who has constantly said no one is above the law, no one, including the attorney general. And the law seems clear that you cannot appoint a man as special counsel who was under the government. Now he's going to say, I didn't appoint him as special counsel. I heard the press conference. You appointed him as special counsel. What you're going to say is, but I didn't appoint him under section 600.3. I appointed him under my inherent powers. But then you gave him the power under section 600. And, you know, it's just not the way I expect our attorney general to act. And it's not the way I expect the district attorney of Fulton County to act, to allow a website to leak the upcoming indictment and then pull it down quickly without explanation. I mean, even on the appointment, you know, when I saw Garland make his announcement on Friday, I knew about this regulation. So I surely expected he would say, by the way, you can notice that his appointment doesn't comply with the regulation because he's not from outside the government. He's inside the government. Let me explain. But he didn't do that. He just let it slip by. That was deceptive in my mind. And I think Congress now not only has the power, it has the responsibility under our system of checks and balances to definitely look into this and to summon Garland and to say, here's the regulation. Read it. The special counsel shall be selected from outside the United States government. You understand that, right? Yeah. You understand what it means outside the United States government? Yes. You understand, don't you, that David Weiss worked for you. He was the U.S. Attorney of Delaware. He was not outside the government. Would you like to explain to the American public why you chose to ignore Section 600.3 of the regulations? Well, I didn't really appoint him under that. All right, let him make a fool of himself by trying to wiggle out of that, but don't let him off the hook. And so I'm hoping that Congress will actually summon Garland, summon Weiss, ask them about the earlier confusion when Garland said he had complete authority to go outside of Delaware to Washington, D.C., and to California. And Weiss seemed to have said to some people, no, I was really restricted to Delaware. Let's clarify that, too. And what did he investigate? Did he look into Burisma? Did he look into why Hunter Biden was paid so much money to be a consultant? You know, I mentioned before, I think I had a case some years ago, one of my first cases. It involves the Teleprompter Corporation. Remember that company? It's that used to have teleprompters, but it was also a cable TV company. And my client, I came in only on the appeal. I wasn't at the trial. My client was convicted of having paid a bribe to get a cable franchise in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, I think it was. It's a long time ago. It's 50 years ago, so my memory is being stretched. And the government couldn't prove that the mayor actually ever received a penny. But his son, who was not qualified to be a public relations expert, was hired by Teleprompter or people on his behalf to be a public relations expert. And the son was paid money more than he should have been paid based on his expertise. Does that sound familiar? Should we be asking hard questions about the money that Hunter Biden was paid? Now, yeah, he's a Yale Law School graduate. I'm a Yale Law School graduate. So, you know, generally, Yale Law School graduates are pretty smart. And he worked for Boies and Schiller. I won't hold that necessarily against him, but Boies and Schiller at the time was representing Burisma, is my recollection, and also maybe him, I don't know. That sounds to me like a conflict of interest. So Congress has the responsibility to check and balance the executive branch, and this is a perfect time to flex muscles, use that power, and get to the bottom of what actually happened. Okay, we got some letters. Let's see what people are saying today. They're saying, I'm so happy to see you do this. The cancellation experience, me being canceled by the book fair previously, by the library, by the Hebrew Center, etc. The cancellation experience you endured made me sad, but mostly horrified. It's astonishing to see people who are standard bearers of civil liberty just caved in a hulking mass to the sanctimonious lowbrows. I don't agree with you. I think these are the sanctimonious lowbrows. They didn't cave into them. The people on Martha's Vineyard who canceled me either are too dumb to understand the difference between representing somebody and supporting them, or they're pretending they're too dumb, and they're just making this argument to make sure nobody ever defends anybody they don't like. But you know, it's a tragedy, and a tragedy more about them than me. Love your program. In these times of information suppression, your program is a refuge for facts and the laws. Thank you. Okay. I'm fascinated that a regular guy like me, hey, I'm a regular guy too. I like regular guys. I was brought up in Brooklyn. I'm fascinated that a regular guy like me can watch videos from you. I'm amazed and thrilled that you take the time from your busy life to share and educate us. Look at me. I'm leaving this comment with you. Wow, thanks. Hey, hey, think better of yourself. Yeah, you're an ordinary guy. Remember what Jefferson once said. Put a tough philosophical problem to a plowman or a professor, and you're likely to get a better answer from the plowman. So if you're the plowman and I'm the professor, I very much admire your willingness to watch my show and to add your comments to the comments of other people. Okay. I pray that you will remain safe and healthy. Turning 85, so far, good luck. Your reason, neutral, and fair analysis is rare and valuable. It runs counter to the prevailing emotional hyperpartisan narratives that have swallowed our nation and appears to have led half of us to believe that the ends justify the means. Half, I think it's much more than that. Even at the expense of once sacred constitutional values like freedom of speech, I pray that America will survive this dark time, led back to reason by individuals like you and like you, like you. I mean, I admire my viewers. I'm getting, by the way, many, many more intelligent and thoughtful letters than I previously get. I'm still getting the nonsense about, you know, Epstein and the accusations and all of that, which obviously have now been withdrawn. Any lawsuit against me has been withdrawn. But nonetheless, people still insist on harping on that. But mostly I'm getting much more intelligent letters, and I appreciate that. How come they don't show the Trump trial on TV live? Well, they probably will show the trials in Fulton County, because that's a state court, and maybe New York live on TV. At the moment, they won't show the trials in Washington, D.C. and Florida live, because those are federal trials. Now, there's no law prohibiting the showing of federal trials on TV. Indeed, the Supreme Court itself, in the argument leading to the overruling of Roe versus Wade, and in other cases, allowed audio, live audio, I think with 30-second delay or something like that, to make sure a president doesn't, a justice doesn't say or do anything inappropriate. We're not supposed to protect our justices or our members of Congress. Everything should be on television. So I think it's a mistake not to put these trials on television, but nobody wants them. Trump doesn't want them on television, and the government doesn't want them on television. They shouldn't really matter. What should matter is what the First Amendment and the American public want, and I think they want public trials. And a public trial means as public as the current media permits it to be, and that means televising it without interrupting or disrupting the trial itself. So I'm hoping that still the trials of Donald Trump will be on television. Okay. Now, here's a typical one. I mean, just an out-and-out lie that people believe is true. You realize, this is Selim Serm, you realize that Biden personally asked the DOJ to arrest Trump, right? No, it's wrong. He never did. But this goes further. Remember, you realize that Biden personally asked DOJ to arrest Trump, right? Yeah. The video of this happening is now available to the public. All right. I hereby offer you $1,000. I can either send you $1,000 worth of bananas or $1,000 in cash. If you can show me a videotape of Joe Biden personally asking the Department of Justice to arrest Trump. I mean, there are vague statements about how important it is to pursue the law, but you're just not going to find that. So please, when you send me letters, just ask yourself, is it true? And if it's not true, I'm going to expose it. Whichever side it's on, I'm going to expose it as false. Okay, here's a good question. What happens if Trump is prevented from running? And, you know, there are efforts to prevent him from running. I wrote an article yesterday in a magazine called Compact, in which I talk about how some Democrats are trying to prevent Trump from running under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which says you can be precluded from running if you were involved in insurrection, rebellion, or gave aid and comfort to such. I don't believe that could happen under the Constitution, but many people think it can. So what happens if Trump is prevented from running and the polls show him way ahead of Biden on Election Day and Biden wins? Claims of stolen election will be legitimate then. Not only that, but, you know, I think people will be furious and upset. They will have been denied their right to elect the president. And the Constitution doesn't give the right to elect the president to judges or jurors or prosecutors or political operatives. It gives them to the people of the United States through the Electoral College. So I hope we don't come to that. But if we do, it will be a constitutional crisis. So I talk about constitutional crises, and I talk about the Constitution, and I talk about how what's going on today earns bananas toward turning us from a republic, if we can keep it, in the words of Benjamin Franklin, to a banana republic. See you tomorrow.
Very quick thinking Reuters News Service spotted it.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.